I'm already crying. I haven't even started yet. Shit. It's going to be a long 45 minutes. So, what an honor. I mean, that's like the healing power of this program. I really want to thank the Day and Al-Anon committee, and not just the committee, but everybody, like, who did anything, you know, brought a pie, or whoever brought the deviled eggs, thank you. You know, there's a lot that goes into this, and I really want to thank everybody. And I'll also try to speak slowly for the translator in the back. But this morning was really remarkable. The workshops I attended, the Beyond Shame, I mean, what a courageous bunch of people we are to talk about shame so openly and honestly. And, you know, I had the honor of facilitating the Beyond Shame workshop with my dear friend Chanel. And while she was speaking, I was looking around the room and there were these people's eyes were filling up with tears. And I thought, this is beautiful. Like, this is really deeply healing. And then the next workshop I went to was facilitated by Jules on gratitude. And it's just, every single person I heard speak today, whether it was in the Beyond Shame workshop or the gratitude workshop, I felt like could be right here carrying this message. And so I just want to thank everybody, not only for the people who put together the event, but for the people who come and attend the workshops and have the courage to open up their mouths. I mean, one man talked about, what was it? The gratitude is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I mean, where else do you hear that stuff? It's so beautiful. So it's just such an honor to be here. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what it was like for me growing up with the disease of alcoholism and addiction. And I also want to thank Fernando. Thank God you made me laugh, because I was like, my heart was in my beating in my throat. So, you know, there's a lot of courage and humility when we can laugh. And I spent a lot of years not laughing. So thank you for the laughter, Fernando, and for your courage. I grew up in rural Michigan. My mother was married 3 times. Her first husband was a violent drunk. I never met him. To this day, I haven't met him. But she had my 2 older brothers in that marriage. She had her first child at age of 19. She divorced him and married my father. And then they divorced by the time I was 2 years old. And her third husband was a heroin addict. And so I was raised with her, my stepfather, and my 2 older half-brothers. My biological father visited me until I was about 4 years old, and then he abandoned me. My stepfather was a heroin addict, so he really wasn't able to parent. There was a lot of lying, stealing, so there was a lot of stress around money, because he didn't make much money, and what money he did make went for his habit. And the stress of that for my mother and the effects of the disease on her meant that she was prone to fits of hysteria and rage, and she could be physically abusive. My 2 older brothers, so my oldest brother sexually abused me when he was a teenager, and I think I was from between the ages of maybe 4 and 8, something like that. And then my mom, by some miracle, started to come to Al-Anon, and she started bringing me. I went to my first Al-Anon meeting when I was 13 years old, and I would go to Alateen, and we had a weekly tradition of that. And at age 17, she was in a car accident and suffered from a traumatic brain injury, and I lost my mother. She survived the accident, but I lost my mother. She never really regained the ability to speak. Her right side was paralyzed, and she was significantly disabled for another 25 years before she passed in 2012. So I share all that with you because that's a lot of trauma in 17 years, right? And I was, and it left me feeling spiritually bankrupt, because if there was a God, I didn't really think that that God loved me, because clearly there was something wrong with me, with a capital W, for all these things to have happened to me, and I'm only 17 years old, and it's already, all that stuff has happened. And I felt deeply flawed. And I was thinking about, how did I get from the traumatic effects of alcoholism to this life I live now, 30 years later, of healing and abundance? Because my life is abundant now. I'm not even lying to you. I promise. Like, not only is there no external trauma and drama in my life, there's really very little internal drama. And I didn't think that was possible. So what happened in those 30 years? And of course, I'm going to tell you that Al-Anon was the solution, but how was Al-Anon the solution? And in talking to people, what I landed on is the three A's. And those are my stepping stones: awareness, acceptance, and then action. I'll say that again: awareness, acceptance, and then action. And I'm going to read from Courage to Change. This is page 256. I have a picture of my mother and me when I was 4 years old. Okay. When dealing with a change, a problem, or a discovery, awareness is often followed by a period of acceptance before we can take action. I would also say trauma, and dealing with trauma, it's the same. This process is sometimes referred to as the three A's: awareness, acceptance, and action. Coping with a new awareness can be extremely awkward, and most of us are eager to spare ourselves pain or discomfort. Yet until we accept the reality with which we have been faced, we probably won't be capable of taking effective action with confidence. Still, we may hesitate to accept an unpleasant reality because we feel that by accepting, we condone something that is intolerable. But this is not the case. As it says so eloquently in One Day at a Time, acceptance does not mean submission to a degrading situation. It means accepting the fact of a situation, then deciding what we will do about it. Acceptance can be empowering because it makes choice possible. It makes choice possible. I will give myself time to accept my situation before I act. Unforeseen options can become available when I accept what is. And as I was thinking and contemplating about the three A's, I noticed that they work as a framework for me with the 12 steps. What I mean by that is I consider the first four steps about awareness, and then steps 5 through 8 about acceptance, and then steps 9 through 12 about action. Because I tend to be very eager to go from awareness right into action. I become aware of some defect, let me get to fixing it quick, right? And when I do that, I've completely forgotten about God. So here's what the process looks like for me. What do I become aware of in those first four steps? Well, in the first step, I become aware that my attempts to get my sense of well-being from other people or through my accomplishments do not work. And it's insane. That's insane behavior, to try to get my sense of well-being from what everybody else is doing. Fortunately, there's step 2, which gives me hope that I can be restored to sanity. And then in step 3, I actually make a decision. Remember, it talked about choice? Then I get the choice of turning my will and my life over to the care of God, of my understanding. And that, my understanding, is tremendously powerful, because what that means is for every single person sitting in this room today, we can each have our own relationship with the God of our understanding. And I don't have to try to get mine to fit yours, and you don't have to get yours to fit mine. That is freedom, and that's really beautiful. I went through my second divorce in 2015. And I call that the year of the tears. I cried every day in 2015, except for 2 days because I was in the middle of a move and I really didn't have time to cry. And during that time, there's an Indian guru. She's considered a saint. Her name is Amma. For those of you who may know who she is, she's considered like the Indian Mother Teresa. And she hugs people. She hugs people. Millions of people. Last I heard, she'd hugged 33 million people. I'm one of them. And I hugged her for the first time, or she hugged me for the first time in 2015. And it was very powerful. And I went home that night, and I went to bed, and I had a dream. And this is such a beautiful, powerful dream. I believe that my higher power chooses sometimes to reach me through my dreams. And so I try to pay attention to my dreams. And in this particular dream, I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I had on a pair of white shorts, like spandex shorts, no shirt. I was in a boxing ring, and I had on boxing gloves. And I was covered in bruises and scrapes. And I don't know or remember who or what I was fighting, but I was crying and I didn't want to be fighting anymore. And I took off the gloves and I crawled through the ropes of the rings into Amma's arms. And she held me as the life left my little body. And that, for me, is just such a powerful, powerful symbol of surrender, that I take off my gloves and I crawl into the arms of the divine feminine and I die. The little fighter dies. And I get to now take responsibility for that little scrawny 7-year-old. She doesn't even know what she's fighting, right? So in step 4, I become deeply aware of how I've been affected by this disease. And I actually wrote down 4 things. This is straight out of my first blueprint for progress. The first way I've been affected by growing up with the disease is a deep feeling of not enough or shame. And that tells me that I'm wrong and that I need to try harder. The second way is that I take things personally, and that's based on a core belief that what other people are doing has any reflection on me. And the third one is being misunderstood. In many of my adult relationships, it was really, really important that people understand me. And if you didn't understand me, well, then I needed to say it nicer. Or maybe I needed to say it louder, or maybe I needed to say it with emotion so you really understood, because I'm sure if you knew how much you were hurting me, you would change your behavior, right? That never really worked. And then the other thing is I tend to be really sensitive around criticism, or if I feel like I'm being confused, I want to defend and protect myself. I guess that's the little fighter with those gloves. And I didn't want to take responsibility for myself because I saw myself as a victim. And to be fair, in childhood, I was in a lot of ways, but I'm not. And what it all sort of boils down to, if I had to put it in a nutshell, is growing up with the disease, I did not learn how to care or love myself. And that's what I start to learn how to do in here. And I don't do it alone. So I get to do it with the compassionate abiding of a sponsor. And I went through, something came up for me in 2017. I had a resentment that I was having trouble letting go of. And my sponsor asked me the most beautiful question. I was like, oh, this resentment won't go away. I've worked the steps, I've prayed. Ah, I just want the forgiveness fairy dust because I don't like feeling this way. And she said, what is the wound that keeps showing up as the resentment? That was such an important question. What is the wound that keeps showing up as the resentment? I said, I don't know. I'll get back to you on that. And I contemplated that. And I was going through this dark time. And we were having a text exchange, and she sent this text to me. And this is sort of the healing power and the compassionate biting of a sponsor. She wrote my name, Kylie. She wrote brilliant, intuitive, spiritual gangster, compassionate, adorable, funny, creative, artist, friend, sister to many, daughter, aunt, lover, playful, meditation warrior, loved, respected, giving, receiving, accepting, willing, caring, smart, kind, beloved. I never heard that in my childhood, that somebody could see me like that. And so I also get to become, not only do I become aware of the negative effects of alcoholism, I also become aware of the beauty in myself that can be seen through the eyes of my sponsor, that I can't maybe see it in every given moment, but you can see it, and I can see that in other people. And so that's a really powerful part of this program for me. And then in steps 5 through 9, I come to accept that although I can't change myself, I can't fix me, God can and does. And in step 5, I love that it says we admit to God, ourselves, and another human being. I love that because as long as I keep that my priority, so my priority in my relationships is my relationship with God, then my relationship with me, and then my relationships with others, my relationships with others go so much better. And I was doing it backwards for most of my adult life. I was focusing on trying to get my relationships with others so that I could feel okay. That's a very different experience than feeling okay and then trying to have relationships with others. And I become entirely ready for God to remove these wounds, these traumas, these defects of character, and I humbly ask God to do that. And then in step 8, I move from willingness to amends, to making a list of people that I've harmed. I become willing, and I think that willingness comes from acceptance, self-acceptance. So it's not coming from a place of shame. I'm so sorry, I need you to forgive me so I can feel okay. It comes from a place of, I'm starting to see myself as a whole human being who has been affected by alcoholism and has some trauma, but also has this inner beauty. And that's where I become willing. And I want to share an experience I had with my father, my biological father. I'd had no contact with him, but I looked him up after, when I was about 18, after my mom's car accident, because I was feeling very much like an orphan. My stepfather was still in active addiction, and it was time to find my biological father. And so I did that, and I met him, and I met his new wife, and I met my 3 younger half-siblings that I didn't know I had. And over the years, we began to build a relationship. And after I'd reunited with him, a few years after I'd reunited with him, I was in college, and I called to see how he was doing. He was going through a divorce with his second wife. And I asked him how it was going, and he said, you know, I think I'm going to go bankrupt trying to get full physical custody of my kids. I inhaled sharply. And before I could even say anything, he said, I made that mistake once, and I'm not going to make it again. And that's a living amends, right? And so there was immediate forgiveness of my father. And we've continued to build a relationship. But the relationship hasn't always looked like what I wanted the relationship to look like. And in November of 2017, I have a spiritual teacher, and her father passed away. And I went to his funeral, and she shared something at the funeral that sort of struck me. She said, we should all be grateful for our parents for giving us a body. I had never considered that. And so I asked myself, am I grateful for my father? And the answer was no. I had forgiven him, but I didn't really feel grateful to him. And fortunately, I was going to be seeing him like a week later because it was right before Thanksgiving. And so I flew to Tennessee where my younger brother was hosting Thanksgiving, he and his wife. And after everybody had left, it was just my brother, his wife, and her parents, and me. Everybody else had left. And I don't know how this happened, but my brother started sharing with his in-laws about the time period from when his parents went through divorce, when his mother left my father. And he said that the man that his mother had left our father for was a violent alcoholic. And he was beating my younger siblings, and my younger siblings, they'd never even been spanked. And he was like 12 or 13, and he ran away in the middle of the night, and he called my dad from a payphone. And my dad came and picked him up, and my brother was getting emotional. Like, my brother's 39 years old. He's been in the military for 15 years, done 5 tours in Iraq. So, you know, he's kind of a tough guy. And he was crying as he was talking about showing our father his bruises and the welts on the back of his body from this his stepfather. And he started talking about everything my father had to do to get my younger siblings out of that situation. And in that moment, I was so, so grateful that my father had abandoned me so that he would have the tenacity to not abandon my younger siblings and to get them out of that situation. And he ended up being a single parent of those 3 kids. Thank God. You know, so I get the seed planted, you know, at this funeral from my spiritual teacher. And that's what the steps do. They sort of just open me up so that I can pay attention. And because I had accepted and forgiven my father, I think I was open to receive that message. That is, you know, 30 years. But that's a tremendous amount of healing. So in steps 9 through 12, I know that like steps 10, 11, and 12 can often be referred to as like maintenance steps. I actually don't see them as maintenance steps. I think of them as action steps because I have to do some things in steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. I have to take right action. In step 9, I take action through amends. I now call my father regularly. I want a relationship with my dad where we speak more often. Well, he doesn't call me, so I call him because that's me taking responsibility for what I want. I didn't think we had anything in common, but I've gotten into falconry lately, and he's fascinated by that, and I wanted a garden, and he knows how to grow stuff. So he came out this summer. We went to a falconry class together. We grew a garden. That's a living amend. That's the action of step 9. And then in step 10, I continue to take that inventory. And I think of step 11 as bringing me into alignment with God's will. And the actions are the prayer and the meditation. And I also get to see remember how I said earlier that at age 18, I really was pretty confident that God didn't care about me or that God had abandoned me? In step 11, I get to learn that that's not true. God hadn't abandoned me, even during those really difficult times. And so when I look back on that, one memory is that I grew up with horses. And animals are a way that I feel really connected to my higher power. I don't know how we had horses. I mean, we were really poor. I was growing up in rural Michigan, and there were days when, you know, if we didn't have money for gas, we were standing around the electric stove to try to stay warm. So we were on welfare. How my mother got her college degree with 3 children and a heroin addict for a stepfather, I will never know. But she did that, and once she started making her own money, we had horses because my mother loved animals. And I recently, in preparing for this talk, I like to learn about other cultures and other spiritual philosophies, and American Indians view animals as very healing and as medicine. And I looked up what they had to say about horses, and this is what it is. Once humans climbed on horses' back, they were as free and fleet as the wind. They could carry burdens for great distances with ease. They could carry burdens. And I spent a lot of hours on the horseback in my childhood. So I was being carried. And we would, in the summertime, we would take the horses down to the river and we would jump off their backs and go swimming. And there was this one afternoon, I have a vivid memory of this. I think I was probably 10 or 11. And I took my little Arab horse across the river, and there was this open field, and it was just the two of us. And I was bareback, and I just let her run full out, full gallop. And my hair's blowing in the wind, and I felt really free and safe, and almost like in a fairy tale, you know? And so those moments were there. I still was having those experiences. I had just been giving all the energy to the negative and to the trauma. But I had those horses to carry me through that childhood. Step 11 also empowers me to stay true to my values. And that has been a really long, long life lesson, because I had spent so much time taking on other people's shame that I thought it was mine. And it really wasn't mine. And one of the areas that this manifested most frequently in my life was in my relationships with men, particularly around intimacy. After my second divorce, I'd read a book called Fidelity by Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Buddhist monk, which is kind of funny that a celibate Buddhist monk was writing about intimacy and relationships, but right? That's kind of ironic. But he wasn't suggesting that we all become celibate, thank God. But he did say some things, though, that really resonated with me. He said that when we are physically intimate, when there isn't a deep love or a deep commitment known to family and friends, that really what we're sharing with that other person is loneliness and suffering. And that really resonated with me. And I'd made a decision that I was going to do it differently and that I would not become intimate again until those two criteria were met, that there was deep love and a long-term commitment known by family and friends. And so when my current partner and I, we'd been friends for a little over a year, when we decided to embark on a romantic relationship, I told him that, and he honored it, and he respected it. I'm 48 years old, and that's the first time I've done that. And I can't really articulate how profoundly healing that was for me, that I got to say when I would be intimate. That was something, knowing that I had a choice in that, was something that was robbed of me in my childhood. And I got to reclaim that. And I think that's a lot to do with step 11, because I became aligned. And then what does step 11 say? That we are the power to carry out God's will. I was empowered to maintain that boundary. And that's where the healing came. And then in step 12, talks about a spiritual awakening. And I've been thinking a lot about that. Like, what does my spiritual awakening look like? And then, because in step 11, I start to learn all the ways that God hadn't abandoned me, right? So I had the experiences with the horses, but also I mentioned that my mother introduced me to Al-Anon when I was 13 years old. I even brought with her, I brought today, this is my mother's ODAT. It's probably 40 years old. It's taped together. It has her handwriting in it. She says that page 348 is a good page, if you want to jot that down. My mother says that's a good page. And that the seed got planted, that even though my mother was profoundly affected by the disease, that she had the foresight to get recovery for herself and introduce me to recovery is quite miraculous. Now, my first husband wasn't an alcoholic, so I graduated myself from Al-Anon because I thought, well, I didn't marry an alcoholic, so I don't need Al-Anon anymore. Yay! So needless to say, that marriage didn't work. But you know what's interesting? This is so great because this is about that reclaiming and sort of dropping those old beliefs. My first husband reached out to me a couple months ago. We hardly ever talk. There's no bad blood. We do the holiday cards, you know, and we're Facebook friends, and that's cool. But he reached out because his current marriage is, they're really struggling. And he said he wanted to talk to me about what had happened in our marriage. And I was like, okay. And it was just so beautiful. I love this program because he said, well, you know, my wife is saying things like, I'm not empathetic and I lack understanding and I'm kind of critical and judgmental. And I remember you used to say that I should, that you should do this, you should do that. And you used to say, stop shoulding on me. And he said, do you remember that? And I said, I do remember that. And he said, well, that's judgment. That's me being judgmental. And I said, you know what? I actually recently did a relationship inventory. Let me see what I said about us. And I pulled it up. And I said that he had a temper and that he didn't understand. I didn't feel understood by him. And when I tried to get him to understand me, I would throw tantrums and then feel ashamed. And when I said that to him, we both just sort of, it was like this moment of compassion, deep compassion for the two of us. I didn't even know that there was any healing to be done there. And he, at the end of the conversation, he was just thanking me profusely for taking the time. And I said, you know what? For all these years, I've been carrying around an unconscious story in my head that you were great and I was too damaged. And he was like, well, clearly that wasn't the case, and I hope you can let that go. I mean, what a gift. What a gift. Because he wasn't an alcoholic, somehow he was great, and I was less than because I'd grown up in the disease of alcoholism. It's another untruth, another shameful lie I've been telling myself that I get to drop. And all I have to do is pay attention. And so for me, step 12, that spiritual awakening, is really about receiving abundance, and coming to believe that abundance can be normal. But it feels a little unfamiliar for me because I've spent a whole lifetime bracing for impact, right? And so I'll share a story. My current partner is not an alcoholic. Yay. No offense to the alcoholics in the room. I love you all. I think I've seen him drink like twice. And he had spent the day hanging out in our studio. We have like a little studio room for art and stuff. And he left the room as I was coming into it. And he'd left a drink on the table. And it's in a glass that looks like the kind of glass you would drink alcohol out of. And the liquid is clear. So I'm pretty sure most of you know what I did, right? You know that I went up and smelled that drink, right? Okay. I smelled his water. And in that moment, that was a moment where I could go from awareness to acceptance to action pretty quickly. Because when I did it, I immediately became aware of, oh, right, this is the part of you that doesn't think you're worthy of a happy, healthy relationship. This is the part of you that thinks you have to figure out what might go wrong so that you can prepare yourself, right? And so I could immediately accept with compassion myself. I kind of chuckled at myself. But there is an action. And the action is that I set down the glass of water and I get my beak out of my boyfriend's business, right? And put it back on me and my conscious contact and what that looks like. And that's an action. Paying attention to all the ways that I feel connected to God, it's an action. And I'll share a couple of ways that I do that. shortly after the divorce, in so I guess around 2014 or 15, hawks started appearing in my life. Hawks were in my dreams. I'm dreaming, like, hawks are dive bombing me, and I'm like this in my dreams. And I start seeing hawks almost every day. I'm not kidding. Like, not just like, oh, look, there's a hawk, but like hawks flying over the windshield of my car, hawks staring at me from willow trees. Like, it's like almost a little creepy. Like, okay, I need to pay attention. Why are hawks stalking me? So I went back to that American Indian book I have around animal medicine. And keep in mind, I'm in a pretty dark place right now. I'm going through my second divorce, so those feelings of shame and not enough, that's coming up, and I'm in recovery, and I should know better, blah, 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 blah. And hawks are considered by American Indians to be the messengers from the spirit world. Messengers from the spirit world. I can't make this up. So every time I see a hawk, I believe that I'm being connected to the spirit world. What a tremendous gift that is. I've taken falconry classes, I'm learning, I'm studying hawks, it's amazing. And I know that may sound silly, but let me give you a really concrete example. Wednesday night, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I couldn't get back to sleep. It was one of those where I got going on the hamster wheel up here. And this is why I keep coming back, because I still can go to this place. And I'm coming up for a promotion. And so what got up in my head was that I'm not worthy. Other people are doing better work than me. I just got into that not enough. And I need to try harder and yada, yada, yada. And I was driving to Fresno the next day for work. And I'm not kidding when I tell you, because I counted over 22 hawks on the way there, and then about three or four more on the way back. And every time I saw one, it was like just that, I'm connected to God. There actually is. This is an experience of God for me. And during that drive, two colleagues called me and said, hey, I hear you're going up for promotion. You know you totally deserve it, right? See, because the thoughts, the stories I tell myself, they aren't always super accurate. And my action in step 12 is that I pay attention to potentially different messages that life is offering me. Another way I feel connected to God is through my dog. And if you're not Facebook friends with me, I will just let you know that I have the cutest dog in the world. He is a white fluffy Samoyed, and the reason I have a white fluffy Samoyed is because it's not practical for me to have a pet polar bear, which is what I really want. And you think I'm kidding, but I'm not, okay? I have been obsessed with polar bears from like, I don't even know how long. And all my friends like have adopted polar bears for me, donated money to save the polar bears in my name. I have stuffed polar bear salt and pepper shakers. It's a thing. It's a big thing. And I'm going to get emotional. If you've ever seen Kristen Bell's reaction to when her husband brought her a sloth on video, that is me when my current partner actually shares my view that it is a good idea to spend a lot of money to go to Manitoba, Canada, and hang out on the tundra with polar bears, okay? He thinks that's a good idea. And when he hung up the phone from booking that trip, I was like, oh. And you saw me get emotional when Sue was introducing me. It's like, I really get to experience this much love? I really get to have a life that's this abundant. I give all of the credit to Al-Anon. Because if you look at the first 17 years of my life, statistically, I should probably be uneducated and have four kids and married to an alcoholic. But Al-Anon is what changed my trajectory. And that's what I want to give credit to. I don't make these things happen. I don't make the hawks appear. You know, God does that. I, left to my own devices, I pick partners who are not available and don't really care about my dreams. So I believe God brought this partner into my life. Another one of my sort of greatest joys in life is being a godmother. My best friend of 30 years decided to be a single mother by choice. And I was there for the birth of her daughter, and she has bestowed on me the honor of being Jasiah's godmother. I can't really think of like a bigger job, a more important job, and the joy that this child brings to me. And for Christmas, she wrote me letters, and they have special directions. So I'm supposed to open this one when I need inspiration. I'm supposed to open this one when I need to laugh, and open this one when I need, when I'm feeling blue. And I sat down to start working on this talk, and I saw these letters from her. And so I opened the letter on for inspiration. I was like, well, I need some inspiration. Let's see what my 10-year-old goddaughter has to say. And this is what she wrote. Dear Kylie, this is a gift of inspiration. I hope it gives you light, peace, and joy. You are a wonder to me. I can't figure out how I got so many wonderful things in one beautiful package. You are like joy on legs, spirit on wings, awesomeness at heart. When my hair blows in the wind, it reminds me of your beautiful self. I don't know where a 10-year-old comes up with that. I don't know why she thinks about me when her hair blows in the wind. But it certainly reminds me of my 10-year-old self on that horse's back with my hair blowing in the wind. These are the loving, abundant connections that I get to experience because of these steps and because of this program. And I'm learning to get more and more comfortable with this amount of love and abundance. There's a Indian guru that I'm really attached to. He says, we are constantly being showered with love, but we walk around with umbrellas up. And the disease of alcoholism was an umbrella that I was holding up, seeing myself as a victim was an umbrella I was holding up. Seeing myself as unworthy was an umbrella I was holding up. Believing that what other people did was a reflection on me was holding an umbrella up. So my spiritual awakening in Al-Anon has been learning how to put my umbrella down and see myself through the eyes of God that comes to me through the beautiful text message of my sponsor, through this amazing letter from my goddaughter, from every hawk I see, every time my dog smiles at me, my partner's generosity, this is abundance. And Al-Anon teaches me how to receive it. And my hope and prayer for everybody in this room, let's all consider putting our umbrellas down and receiving the abundance of love that we have. Thank you for letting me share.